Toy Story was a huge hit when it premiered in 1995, that year's most commercially successful film. It was followed by Toy Story 2 in 1999, but then we had to wait 11 years until Toy Story 3 was released last summer. It, too, has been hailed by critics like Time magazine's Richard Corliss as an instant classic, and now that it's out on DVD and Blu-ray, I'm very pleased to have a chance to speak with Lee Unkrich, who directed it and co-wrote it with John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton. Welcome to our show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So why such a long wait between the last two sequels?
Well, you know, we wanted to make a third Toy Story pretty much right after Toy Story 2. We had some ideas for a film that we could make. But unfortunately, there were a lot of kind of political issues between Disney and Pixar at the time that prevented us from making another movie.
And they've been smoothed out?
Well, they were ultimately smoothed out about 5 years ago when Disney bought Pixar. So we became a part of Disney. And when that happened, those problems went away and we were finally freed up to make a third Toy Story film.
I'm assuming there were also concerns about the stakes being higher each time you make another one because the others have been such successes.
Yeah, I don't know that it's so much the stakes as just we just want to make sure we have a story worth telling. We've all seen bad sequels in our lives, and we've seen films that were clearly made to just cash in on the success of a previous film, and that was the last thing that we wanted to do. You know, we hold these characters especially because they represent the genesis of our studio. We hold them very close to our hearts, and the last thing we want to do is exploit them in any way.
So once you got the go-ahead, how long did it actually take to make?
Just over 4 years.
Why
which,
so long?
Well, you know, people are often surprised when they hear 4 years and they think it's a long time, but that's actually pretty much how long it takes to make any animated film. And to be honest, if you look at any live-action film, if you go back to the beginnings of somebody having an idea and starting to write a screenplay and all the development that goes on, you're not that far off from that number either. It's just, you know, it's a big enterprise to make a film and to get all the elements in place, and animation especially.
And in this case, you had the added problem of 3D, didn't you?
Well,
was that there from the start?
We always knew that we were going to release the film in 3D, but it was very important for us to not compromise the movie in any way and not make a gimmicky 3D movie. We all feel that 3D can be a fun way to watch films. So we've put together a really great team of people at the studio that are responsible for doing the 3D versions of our movies. But to be honest, it wasn't something that I personally had to deal with much while we were making the film.
There's always that temptation to have a lot of things appear to swing out into the audience when you're doing 3D.
Right. And that was the last thing we wanted to do. I mean, you know, this film will hopefully be around for a really long time and people will see it in 3D and not in 3D, and I just want it to work as a good film.
How did you react when you were asked by John Lasseter to direct it?
Well, I was initially really flattered to be asked, and then I got very, very sick to my stomach because I started to feel the crushing enormity of the responsibility that he was putting on my shoulders.
Well, had you directed anything before?
Yeah, I've been at the studio for about 16 years now. I started as a film editor. I edited the first Toy Story and our second film, A Bug's Life. And then I was the co-director with John Lasseter of Toy Story 2, and I also co-directed Monsters Incorporated and Finding Nemo. So I've been around for a while, but this was my first solo directing effort.
And directing an animated film like this is a lot different, I'd imagine, than directing real live action. Although you still have to worry about the same sorts of things, how the camera moves.
Exactly.
The flow of it. You had been an editor, so I'm assuming that helped you in thinking about those things.
Yeah, you know, it's very different in a lot of ways, but it's also very similar in a lot of ways. And it's probably more similar than it is different. I mean, ultimately, we're still making a film. We're still working from the same cinematic palette that any filmmaker is working from, in terms of choices like camera and, blocking and staging, music, everything that goes into making a film. And we actually do work with real actors. I mean, I've got Tom Hanks and Tim Allen and a really enormous cast on this film. And, you know, I had to spend a lot of time with each of those actors individually helping them craft the performances.
Do they record the dialogue before you even start on the visuals?
Well, we do all the dialogue before we start animation. We always animate to the actors' voices, and we do that for a few reasons. One, it allows the actors to, have a little more freedom in their performance, and they can even improvise if that's something that they like to do. But then when the animators start animating, they have this very rich vocal track to inspire them. The animators are kind of providing the physical aspect of the performance, but if they don't have a vocal track to listen to, then they're kind of working in a void and they have nothing to work with. So it's really the two of them kind of working in tandem that ultimately yields the performances you see in the film.
It's obvious that the animators are thinking about Tom Hanks when he's talking, because his lips, Woody's lips, move very similarly to Tom Hanks's lips.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people think that we try to make our characters look like the actors that are playing them, and it's really never the case. And we just try to design appealing characters, and there's just something about hearing a particular actor's voice come out of that character. People start to think that they see certain mannerisms or things showing up. It's impossible for that not to happen. I mean, Tom has such a rich, vibrant, expressive voice. The animators just love animating to him.
There are humans in the story, and even in the earliest days of animation, the animators mixed real people with animated figures. You, from the start, have decided not to do that here. You have just animated the toys and animated the real people.
Oh,
as
you mean
well.
Rather than photographing humans?
Yeah, like Jessica Rabbit, for example.
Right. Well, that's just a different kind of film where people would mix animation and live action, and that's certainly been done before, but that's kind of not what we're interested in at Pixar. We kind of like making our purely animated films.
Isn't this an unusual sequel in that it deals with the fact that all of the intervening years have passed and your characters, both the humans and the toys, are growing older?
Yeah, it is. I think it was kind of a bold move for us to make. If you look at most animation, if you look at something like The Simpsons, and that family, those kids, they've all stayed the same age for a very long time now. But there was something interesting about those 11 years passing between Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3. We as filmmakers have all grown up a bit, and we have our home lives and our families, and our children have been growing up, and we feel like it felt only right for the characters to kind of age along with us.
Including the toys, who are becoming adults in a way.
Well, yeah, a little more so in each film, certainly, as we do as we go through our lives. You learn a little bit from the experiences you go through and the tragedies you have to face.
It's a complicated plot, but do you want to sketch out at least the broadest outline?
Well, at its very simplest, we have a group of toys led by Woody and Buzz Lightyear, who have been in the first two movies, and they're owned by a little boy named Andy. And in Toy Story 3, that little boy is no longer a little boy. He's grown up. He's 17, almost 18. He's about to head off to college. And that kind of leaves the toys in a quandary. They don't know what the future holds for them. They don't know if they're going to end up in the attic or be thrown away. And, through a series of misadventures, they end up being donated to a daycare center, which at first they think is going to be, the perfect utopia, like a retirement home for toys where they'll always be played with by a fresh batch of kids.
And it could be, but not in this case.
Could be, but not in this case. It turns out to be not such a great place. It's kind of more of a prison than a Boca Raton retirement home. And the toys have to figure out how to get out of Sunnyside, the daycare, and make their way back home.
And also fight the tyranny of other toys.
Sometimes, there are good toys in the world and there are bad toys in the world. And this film has a particularly bad toy in the form of a plush pink strawberry-scented teddy bear named Lotso, who's played by the great character actor Ned Beatty.
Is this the first plush character you've ever done? Because pretty much all the others have either been fabric or plastic.
Right. Well, there was a reason for that, because in the early days of computer graphics back in the mid-90s, it was easy to do things like Buzz Lightyear and Woody, but it was very difficult to do more organic things like plush toys and people. But as the years have gone by, we now can do just about anything we want. So we thought this was a great opportunity to have a plush character, because, of course, plush stuffed animals are a big part of anybody's toy collection.
My guess is Lee Unkrich, who directed and wrote with John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton Toy Story 3, which has just been made available on DVD and Blu-ray, and I guess eventually 3D when that's possible on TV.
Yeah, I'm sure that could happen. I just want to correct you that John and Andrew and I wrote the story for Toy Story 3, but the screenplay was actually written by Michael Arndt.
Oh.
Yeah, Michael Arndt, who was the Academy Award-winning screenwriter of Little Miss Sunshine, he came on and actually wrote the screenplay for Toy Story 3.
So you, he gave you the plot, and then you fleshed out the details, knowing how the thing was going to be made?
Well, it was actually the reverse. John and Andrew and I and a few other folks cooked up the story initially. We went to a little cabin in the woods where they had come up with the original Toy Story idea, and we spent 2 days just kicking around ideas. And then once we came up with the skeleton of the film, I came back and started working with Michael Arndt, the screenwriter, and he and I kind of worked for the next 2.5 years, really, fleshing it out and writing the screenplay for the film.
When sequels are proposed, there's invariably a problem getting everybody to sign on again. You've got all the original characters from the first two ones, Tom Hanks, Tim Allen as Buzz Lightyear, Joan Cusack as Jessie the Cowgirl, and Don Rickles as Mr. Potato Head. Have the characters changed at all over the years?
Not really. I mean, you know, we always thought of the toys as being adults, and the situation of them being Andy's toys in his room, we thought of that as being like an office situation, like a bunch of people working together in an office. And, you know, most adults don't change much, right? We kind of stay the same, and so the toys have very much stayed the same, though. By the end of the film, they really come together as a family much more than they kind of ever were in the first two films.
I read that originally Don Rickles, when he was approached for the part, snorted, "I don't play potatoes. Leave me alone."
I think he actually did give John a hard time at the beginning. But Don kind of gives everybody a hard time. It's how he's wired. But he's a sweetheart, and I just love every moment I got to spend with him making this film.
Well, you do have an all-star cast here. Michael Keaton is the swinging bachelor Ken.
Yes.
To be paired with Barbie.
Yes.
You mentioned Ned Beatty as as Lotso, mm-hmm. doing a slight Southern accent.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great people in the cast.
And Michael Keaton kind of, I don't know, is it Michael Keaton or the Ken doll that steals a lot of scenes here?
Well, I don't know that you can separate the two. You know, when we decided to have a Ken doll be in the movie, just the idea of Ken being in the movie made us laugh. We knew it was just filled with comic potential. But once Michael came on board, and he signed on almost immediately, he was the first person we thought of for the role, and thankfully he accepted it. He just took it to a whole nother place, and I think he does run away with a lot of the movie. Every scene that he's in is just hilarious.
Well, Ken does a lot of disco dancing that's quite funny. That must have been fun directing.
Yeah, you know, one of the funnest things about
like
Ken—
making the Ken doll into John Travolta.
Right. Well, we did have fun with his little fashion show. But the thing that I think is most fun with Ken is that he moves like a real Ken doll. You know, we could have easily animated him just like a little man walking around, but we try to stay true to the way Ken dolls move and how stiff they are, and they can't bend their fingers at all. And just the way that he kind of shuffles around makes the audience laugh. And I think it's a laugh because people recognize the truthfulness of how we're treating the toy.
So each toy has its own special logic to it. Is it hard to make a character move when it has no internal structure or bones?
We spend a lot of time studying real toys. And, you know, the animators will just play with different toys that are similar to the kinds of toys that we use in the film and kind of work out how they would move. I mean, that's part of the joy of an animator, is to be able to take an inanimate object and figure out if it was alive and had a soul and had thoughts, how would it express itself? How would it move itself around?
You researched that, but did you also have to research places like daycare centers and landfills?
Absolutely. We visited a lot of daycare centers early on. I have three children myself who all went through preschool, so I spent a lot of time at the preschool that they went to up in Northern California. And one of the things that struck us very early on is that there wasn't much difference between a preschool and a prison. If you strip away all the colorful drawings and the posters, you're left in a lot of cases with cinder block walls and just these very institutional looking rooms. And then on top of that, you often have a playground in the back that's surrounded by a high wall and security cameras everywhere. And it looks very much like a prison. So it wasn't a big stretch for us to take Sunnyside, the daycare in our film, and make it feel like a kind of a dank, formidable prison.
Although in the case of the daycare centers, the fences are all there to protect the children, not to prevent them from escaping.
Right. But in our case, of course, it kind of served double duty.
Are you looking for a different look for the human characters? How did you approach Andy as a 17-year-old?
You know, the humans were interesting in this film because there had been the same human characters in the first two Toy Story films. But looking back on them visually, they were kind of the weakest part of those films. And a lot of that had to do with just the state of technology at the time. But it was very important for me on Toy Story 3 that the humans look as believable and appealing as possible, because I knew that especially at the very end of the film, the last scene was going to be carried by Andy and this little girl, Bonnie. And we were going to be in big close-ups on Andy, and he couldn't look weird and computer generated and freaky. He had to feel like a real flesh and blood person.
So you have 3D, which is a technological change here, and I'm assuming all the next Pixar films will be in 3D because that's where you've been going. But how did the technology how much has the technology changed in the past 11 years since Toy Story 2?
It's changed a lot in that at the beginning when we made Toy Story, we had to kind of choose our subject matter based on what we could do at the time. And slowly over the years, you know, we pushed the boundaries a bit. Like on Finding Nemo, it was very difficult to do water. So we thought, well, let's tackle that. Let's figure out how to do very believable looking water, which we did. And we've tackled a lot of those challenges from film to film. And as I said earlier, we've now gotten to the point where we can really do just about anything we want. Some things are still tricky to pull off, but by and large, we're only limited by our imagination.
Like what? Can you describe a sequence that was really difficult to pull off?
Well, for instance, on Toy Story 3, at the end of the film, the toys find themselves in a landfill at a city dump. And they're surrounded by mountains of trash on conveyor belts that's tumbling and going through grinders and going into an incinerator. And there were just literally millions and millions of discrete pieces of trash that needed to look believable and real and needed to behave properly. And, you know, I had a team of folks on the film that spent a year and a half of their lives just trying to figure out how to make that look good.
Have you always wanted to be an animator? You were rejected by USC's School of Cinematic Arts 5 times over 3 years.
I was. Yeah. Well, they finally let me in on my 5th application, luckily. And hopefully they're happy that they finally let me in. I actually am not an animator. I'm the first person to direct a film at Pixar who is not an animator.
You're an editor?
I directed when I was in film school and edited, and I started my professional career as a film editor. So I was always on a path towards live action, and I think that's part of what made me appealing to the team when I came to Pixar, is that they hadn't done live action at all. And what we discovered in the early days on Toy Story is that we were making films that, even though they were animated, they really shared more of the cinematic grammar of live action than the traditional 2D animation that had been done up to that point. So I think I really kind of completed their team and brought a kind of a different sensibility to the table.
Will there be another Toy Story now that Andy has gone off to college? Can there be another Toy Story?
Well, you know, I tried really hard to end the story of Andy and his toys in a really lovely way on this film. But, you know, back on the first Toy Story, a lot of people said, is there going to be a Toy Story 2? And we said, no, we're never going to make another one. So I'm not in any position to say what will and will not happen.
Lee Unkrich is the director of Toy Story 3 and one of the collaborators on the script. The film is now available on DVD and on Blu-ray, and if you can see it on Blu-ray, it really looks quite extraordinary.
Yeah, that's definitely the way to watch it if you can. It's it basically looks exactly the same way as it looked while we were making it at Pixar.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It was great being here.